Chapter 30. America Chooses Sides. Wilson lived modestly. When House stayed with him, they shared the same bathroom. After the evening meal, the president would read the Adventures in Arcadia aloud. He would wind up the clock, let the cats out, and be up at 6:30 the next morning. His White House guests were not overindulged, there was nothing to smoke and only water to drink, recalls House. He appeared literally incapable of handling more than one thought at a time, I regret to say, wrote House, he would sometimes act on very important matters with hardly any consideration. House, 1, page 103. Behind this presidential front, House made his own moves unobtrusively. He could walk on dead leaves as silently as a tiger, said Senator Gore. House enjoyed his power behind the throne, and for 8 years he would pull the strings of presidential power. Wilson appeared quite comfortable with the arrangement. Mr. House is my alter ego. He is myself independent from me. His thoughts and mine are one. House exercised his power as unelected president in the affairs of Europe, which at that time were not of the slightest interest to the public or the politicians. The world would witness the strange spectacle of a United States president accompanying House to his train in the most deferential manner. Colonel Mandel House was being sent off to Europe to represent the United States and the president among foreign rulers without any official mandate. From January 1914 to the end of July 1914, he sent Wilson numerous letters conveying his interpretation of what ailed Europe. The conflicts were idiotic and only a non-European arbiter could bring them to an end. In Europe, House created an exotic impression. German generals tried to talk military strategy with the colonel. Without much success. House finally explained he was more a political strategist than a field tactician and went on to meet the Kaiser. The Kaiser received House warmly at Potsdam. His English is clear and concise, House wrote Wilson, he is too much of a gentleman to monopolize the conversation. He speaks and he listens. He wants peace because Germany's interest demands it. He expresses goodwill and admiration for England. House revealed his plans for peace. I told the Kaiser why I undertook my mission and why I was in Germany in the first place. I wanted to talk with him. An American would probably be better than a European in solving problems. House was very proud to announce that the Kaiser had accepted his conclusions. I have succeeded as much as I could have expected. I am very satisfied with the result. House believed that the only threat to peace was the Kaiser and that since he had won him over he had in fact solved every problem. All that remained was a formality, a visit to Paris and London in order to seal peace in Europe. It would be in these two cities, however, that House would experience patent failure. In Paris the politicians were playing musical chairs as usual. During the Third Republic Frenchmen were ruled by an average of 500 ministers per decade. House arrived in the midst of a frantic shuffle of portfolios. He could find no one to whom he could talk about his mission. In any event, Paris was totally absorbed in the Madame Kalos affair, which had chased all other issues from the headlines for more than a month. There was no way House could compete with such an attraction. He left Paris on June 9, 1914, empty-handed. In London, he met with similar lack of interest. London is completely involved in the social whirl. It is impossible to do any business now. People only think about Ascot and garden parties. I am on barren ground, House wrote. For the most part, he would meet people who studiously avoided responsibility. He finally managed to be received by Foreign Minister Sir Edward Grey, whose main interest lay in fishing and bird calls. He knew 41 different calls, he informed House. House found him uninformed about the United States and its institutions. Everywhere he went, he tried to sell his peace plan. I insist on the importance of adopting a precise policy of international collaboration aimed at practical goals. This was exactly what his pompous interlocutors did not want. House compared the various attitudes, Berlin was unequivocally positive, in Paris no one wanted to talk to him, and London was deathly afraid of talking peace, indeed even of the possibility of talking peace. At that time, the Sarajevo assassination had not yet occurred. There was no official display of anti-German posturing, although the British establishment hated German trade competitors. 2 months later, the British government and press would noisily broadcast that the Kaiser had wanted the war. In mid-June 1914, however, he was the only one who took the time to listen and to approve of Haus's plan. He alone accepted American mediation to preserve peace in Europe. Haus was at a loss to explain why the others had proved to be uncooperative. Grey hinted a reason: I must take French and Russian susceptibilities into account. Haus, 1, 307. Why would peace talks upset the French and the Russians? Sir William Tyrrell shared Grey's concern: I am looking for a way to approach the Germans without upsetting the Entente's other members. The admission was revealing. The situation was growing urgent. By then a whole week had elapsed after the July 3, 1914 Sarajevo assassination. The British government even refused a verbal communication with Germany. Haus tried in vain: I attempted to get an answer before my departure, but Sir Edward diplomatically sidestepped the issue. With this final brush off, Haus wrote the Kaiser a three-page letter on July 9, 1914. My purpose in undertaking this journey was to find out the possibilities of creating a more cordial relationship among the great powers. Considering the prominent position Your Majesty occupies in the world and its well-known desire to maintain peace, I went immediately to Berlin, as Your Majesty knows. I will never forget Your Majesty's kindly support of the plan conveyed by my mission, as well as the clear exposition concerning present world conditions kindly offered by Your Majesty. Your Majesty gave me all the assurances of its benevolent approval concerning my president's project. I left Germany happy at the thought that Your Majesty would use its high influence in favor of peace. In England he had not been able to see the British monarch from near or far, while in Potsdam he had been invited to the Emperor's table and had been free to converse with him at length. The British ministers who had welcomed him were extremely evasive. Haus was seen as an untimely nuisance. Wilson was still elated at Haus's Berlin success and thought peace was at hand. Your letter from Paris, the president wrote, written as soon as you left Berlin, caused me a profound joy. I believe and I hope you have laid the first foundation for a great achievement. On July 31, 1914, Haus wrote his last letter to the president. I have failed to convey to them the urgent necessity for immediate action. Thus they let things drag on without giving me the definitive answer which I wanted to send to the Kaiser. If my project could have been advanced further, Germany could have exerted pressure on Austria, and the cause of peace might have been saved. 45 days had gone by in London and Haus had not convinced anybody. Professor Charles Seymour of Yale would write after the war, "If only the British had decided to consider Haus's proposals in time, we might have reached an international agreement before the Sarajevo murder." My government, concluded Page, United States ambassador in London, did everything in its power to prevent war. The governments of France and Britain had demonstrated their bellicosity by rejecting the American offer. They were set on war and were not about to be sidetracked into peace. The Kaiser often said during his post-war Dutch exile, Haus's visit in Berlin during the spring of 1914 almost prevented the war. The Allies' lust for war was such that even when the Germans had the advantage, they still refused to negotiate, regardless of the frightful cost in lives. Haus would later switch over to the British side, but at the time he left no doubt as who was responsible for the war. I am often asked who is responsible for the war, he wrote on April 15, 1915. I never commit myself. But here I can say what I think: I do not believe the Kaiser wanted the war. For 2 more years Wilson would several times sincerely attempt peace negotiations, while at the same time Haus drew closer and closer to the Allies. Wilson's efforts were cause for marked irritation among the Allies, whose unswerving goal was to crush Germany. Nothing else was allowed to intervene. Apart from his desire for peace, Wilson's persistent efforts were also undertaken with an eye on the electorate, which was almost unanimously neutralist. Until April 1917, the United States government maintained its course for peace. In the end, it took all of House and Balfour's mastery of intrigue to railroad America into the war.